So, hello and welcome.
Hi.
I'm Philip. I'm from Fluffy Fairy Games, and today I want to talk a bit about our approach of developing great video games, and also about our approach or how we use LiveOps for that. So if there are any questions that I'm not capable of answering, then the CTO, Ollie, will be here as well at the Edger booth, so feel free to ask him any questions that you have, and I might not be able to answer. About us, about Fluffy Fairy Games, we're a pretty young company with now already above 50 employees, and we're growing pretty rapidly, so it's pretty amazing to look at. We have two titles right now, which are Idle Miner Tycoon and Idle Factory Tycoon, which is currently in soft launch. Idle Miner Tycoon, our flagship, already has over 30 million installs and over 8 million monthly active users, which is pretty impressive in my opinion. And I want to talk a bit about how we approach game development in general. So let's start. What we believe in, what is our main thought, is that games are a hit-driven business. So when you either get a hit or it's basically just crap and you can get rid of it. So what we think is the faster you find out that something works or that it does not work, the better for you. So the faster you can say anything is not good enough, you can get rid of it and start with the next project. So always finding out whether or not something works as soon as possible is critical in my opinion. So how can we achieve that? How can we find out that something does not work the fastest possible? In our opinion, it's a prototyping aspect. So you have to say no to a lot of things. So you have to say, for example, we said no to all sophisticated features that you could add into your game, like cloud save, like in-app purchases, social features, and such. So we started only with the bare minimum of what is necessary to check whether or not the core mechanic of a game is working or not. So this is our approach. We get rid of anything that is not absolutely necessary to find out whether or not a game is fun or not. So what we call this is a minimum viable product. So for example, for our second title, we build a minimum viable product as you see here. We start with only what is absolutely necessary and got rid of anything else. So on the left side, for example, you see what it looked like in the beginning, in the first days. It was just, it was not even worth calling a game, but it was pretty cool already. And it just developed all this up to the right side in only 8 weeks. So we give ourselves a time limit until when we want to release something. And this is our time frame in which we want to, or which we give ourselves to make sure that we find out whether or not something works or not. So after that, we released it. And what we look at then is the day one retention, because in our opinion, the most important thing to look at is exactly that. So you want to find out whether or not a game is cool enough or fun enough for players to come back the next day. And I remember us sitting there and looking at the numbers and wanted to find out whether or not our next title, Idle Factory Tycoon, is worth it. And fortunately for us, it was high enough. We have 70% the day one retention with this game, and so we decided to continue developing it. If it would not have met our expectation, we would just have gotten rid of it. So we would not invest any more money, any more resources into developing something that is not cool enough for us to work on. So we have this metric, day one retention, that we use to determine whether or not we want to keep developing a game or just starting with the next one. Because the sooner you find out whether or not it works, the sooner you can start the next project and try out the next idea. What you can do, or what do we do, when we find out that something is working, is we are continuing developing it, of course. And what we do especially is we're listening to the players. Because in our opinion, it doesn't make sense for you to have a game which is perfect for you, but nobody else likes it, you know? So the players are the ones we develop the games for, so we want them to decide what is necessary for the next steps. So we always listen to them. We look into comments in Google Play, of course. We use all our social media influences we can use, or we even have mailing lists where people can write from within the game and suggest features or give feedback to existing features. So we can improve on that. We can work on that, and we can integrate this feedback directly into our game. And this is what leads our path through the development. So to achieve this, we need a very fast development cycle. And this is why we have weekly updates. So every week we have a release. Every week we have a sprint and a new update coming. So this is how we achieve it, to incorporate ideas from the players and feedback as soon as possible. So we can just try something out when the player says, okay, he wants to have something. We can just throw it in there, and then we just look at the feedback and check whether or not it's working and whether or not the players are corresponding positively to that. So what is in this 1 week, and this is amazing that we just, we get it done in 1 week, but still, everything is included in there. So the planning, the development, the actual development, and the testing is all included in 1 week. Of course, sometimes for bigger features, we have to plan ahead a bit, and sometimes the testing takes a bit longer, but usually we say 1 week, 1 week of development, and everything is done for the next release. So there is this continuous flow of releases that we give out, this continuous flow of new features that we add. And to give you some examples of how we use this to incrementally add features to our game from the minimum viable product, I give you a short historical overview of what we added. So for example, in the beginning, the players were demanding new content, like for example, in our example, new mines or new continents and such. And what we did is we did exactly what they asked for. We added these new contents. We added new mines, added new continents and stuff like that. So what happened automatically is that the player were happier. The user satisfaction grew. And also the retention, because they had more content to explore. Player could stay in the game for longer. What happened then is we needed something to keep our company alive. So what we did is we added in-app purchases, but not only for us, but also because player demanded for that. There were players who wanted to be able to accelerate their progress within the game. So we gave them an option. So they demanded this as well. So we only do what the players want. And this is something that is, in my opinion, a critical part of our company, that we always orient on what the players are demanding for. After that, for example, players wanted to have a localization. They don't want to play it only in English because they had friends which are speaking French or whatever. And so what we did is we added more localization. But you don't do this at the minimum viable product, not from the beginning. First, you have to find out whether or not something works. And if that is the case, then you can just add stuff like this, like localization, for example. Then we also experimented with live ops, which I will talk about in the second part, and added, for example, time-limited content and stuff like that, which was also something that the players were demanding. And what we did is we gave it to them. And that way, we passively also increased our retention and revenue numbers as well, because happy players are good players, right? So this is exactly the way we go. And we are developing our game for the players. And so the players are just, it makes sense, right? It's in my opinion, it's a no-brainer. But still, it's not what a lot of companies do. After that, for example, we added social features, because still a lot of people are asking for social features. They want to incorporate mines, or they want to build mines together, they want to play with their friends and stuff like that. And what we did is we created these concepts and we added them to the game just for the players. And I will talk about this multiplayer feature in the second part as well. And of course, there's always more stuff coming soon. So we are constantly looking into the streams of social media and such to find out what are the players in demand of. So what do they want to have? What do they wish for in the game? And this is exactly what we plan for the next releases. And we can implement this in a week. You know, you just ask for something, you just write a mail somewhere, and a week later it might already be in the game. And this is an amazing feeling for the players as well. Of course, with this increasing amount of features, there was also an increasing tech stack that we had in behind. So we don't start with planning ahead a lot of tech, a lot of different technologies that we add into the game, but instead this was growing incrementally as well. So we started with just some simple crash reporting like Fabric or Crashlytics. And then with the features upcoming, we also added the technology necessary for that. So we added PlayFab for in-app validation, or for example, OneSignal for push notifications and such. But we didn't put this in there from the start, but only when we needed it. And now, for example, we already been growing that far that we now added our own data analytics platform using Azure, for example. So there's always more stuff coming soon, and we don't plan ahead for 3 years and then release it. But instead, we release it in the beginning and then put stuff in there that the players are demanding, so we make sure that we go into the right direction. All right. Let's talk about the live ops we use in Idle Miner Tycoon, for example. First of all, a lot of companies are thinking of live ops as something that is that enables them to add new game content with the least amount of effort. So they just tweak in some numbers in the back end, they're just uploading some files, and blah, there's new game content for the players, and the player retention raises and stuff like that. For us, live ops is much more than that. For us, our whole attitude to game development describes what we understand as live ops. For us, it's this constant stream of new content that we throw out there that is live ops. It's that we have ourselves set the goal to make the game feel life, alive. You know, this is live ops for us. This is that what we want to create a vivid environment for the players, that they see, okay, last time I checked the game, this wasn't there. That's cool. I got to check this out. They added a new social feature or whatever. This is what we understand as live ops. Still, of course, we are having a lot of backend stuff that I will talk about now because I'm the game backend developer on IMT. So, namely, we, for example, use player gifts to reward loyal players for their loyalty and stuff like that, which is a pretty powerful tool and which is pretty easy to implement. We have our time-limited content, which we call the event mines. And also we have our multiplayer feature, which I will talk about in detail, which we call the expeditions. Maybe some of you already have played the game. If not, you should definitely check it out, because especially the expeditions are just amazing. Let's talk about player gifts first. It's a pretty simple concept. So we know that every player wants to be treated as an individual. And we have a lot of occasions where we exactly want to do that. For example, if we have whales or players that have been playing for a year already, and we want to just say them, thank you. Thank you for playing so long, and please stay in touch with the game and just continue playing. Then we can just give them some small appreciation. We can just say, okay, this player has this idea, okay, just grant them an item ticket, and next time he pops up the game, this panel will show up, and he will be able to redeem this and use it in the game. Simple as that. It's pretty simple, but it enables us to do a lot of things. For example, as I said, whales or long-term players. We could, for example, even use it for churners. We could, for example, reward a player who reported an important bug for us. We could say, oh, thank you. This helped us a lot in our progression in the game. So we could find this bug and determine it. So thank you. Here you have a gift. Now, it's as simple as that. But of course, these are scenarios where you only want to reward a single player, but we also have, you know, we do have a lot of players. We have around 30 million total players right now. And if we want to address all of them individually, it would be an amazing amount of work. So what we do is we use segmentation, of course. And fortunately for us, our backend PlayFab already offers a solution for that. So we can say, okay, we define whales as people who have spent at least 1,000 bucks in our game. And yes, there are players who fit in this category. And then we can say, okay, to all these players, whoever they are, we grant item tickets in this and this constellation. So these are the items we want to grant to these players. And boom, that's it. There are a lot of players now that are happy for feeling individually treated. Sorry. So to implement this, it's pretty easy, just as you expect it to be. We just add something to our inventory, to our player inventory in the back end. And the next time the player starts the game, he will check whether or not there are new item tickets in his inventory. And if they are, then just show this panel. And when he clicks on this awesome button, we redeem these tickets. So we remove them on the back end side from his inventory, and on the client side, he gets the items for in-game, so he can use them. He can use boosts or instant cash or whatever. So it was implemented in less than a day, but it's still a very, very powerful tool. All right. The next part are our event mines. This is our time-limited content, and this is something that just exploded under our hands. We didn't expect it to be that successful, but it is an amazing tool. So what you see on the right side here is, for example, our St. Patrick's mine, which is, has been active the last weekend, for example. So it's pretty new. And what you see is each of these event mines is unique content that has never been there in the game before. So we really design them for certain purposes, and they are only available for a certain period of time. So for example, for a weekend, or maybe 5 days, or 7 days, or 9 days, but it's time limited. So first of all, this reactivates players who haven't been in the game for long. So they see, oh, there's something new. There's something new stuff that I haven't seen before. I've had already all mines unlocked, and I'm at the last continent, but this is new. This has never been there before. So they come back to the game. So this increases retention, of course. Then it's also refreshing in some way, like I just said. What is also interesting is that this time limit, this saying we have you only have 2 days to be in this mine, this motivates purchases. Why? Because we give them objectives. So you can say, okay, when you reach shaft blah blah in this mine, then you will get a reward. So we have a lot of achievements like that. So they really want to push through this event mine. They really want to get to these points where they get their achievements and their rewards for using in-game. And especially what we added is we have event badges. So you can say, okay, I participated in this mine, or I reached this achievement. And then you can say, okay, hey, dude, you're my friend. You have a gold participation badge in this event mine. Damn, I only have silver. Damn, next time I want to push harder. You know, this is a social aspect as well, that you can say, okay, you reach a certain tier in the achievement level of this event mine, and this motivates players to save money in beforehand just for these event mines, to say, okay, I need a lot of progress now. I only have 2 days. I want to get through this. I want to get better than my friends and stuff like that. So they really are anticipating this, and they are preparing for our event mines, which is just crazy in my opinion. And also, which I like the most about these event mines, is that we can incorporate ideas from the fan base, from the player base, directly. So for example, we had emails and Facebook posts and stuff where players requested something like, hey, let's do a candy mine, let us go to space, let's do an underwater mine, let's do a cheese mine, whatever. They have, you know, the fantasy is amazing of these players, and they have so many ideas. And what we did is, we had a candy mine, we had a space mine, we had a cheese mine. So exactly these ideas that the players are suggesting, just as a simple Facebook post, become reality. And this is something, as a player, I have to say that this is something that I wish for in a game that I'm playing. I'm just suggesting some changes and they become reality. And this is amazing. And this also motivates a lot of players to come back to the game to see whether or not their ideas might have become reality. And this is just, in my opinion, this is awesome. Sorry. But this is awesome, in my opinion. To show you this from our perspective is that it's pretty amazing to see what these events look like in the back end. So I just show you some graphs now. And if you look to the bottom left, you will see that the login times at 3 p.m. almost doubled. At 3 p.m., as you might guess, our event mine started. So all the players were flooding the event mines. They all logged in with their devices. They all come back to the game to participate in this time-limited experience. And as you look on the bottom right, you see our purchases in this period of time. So you see at 3 p.m. this huge spike of income, because all the players were already saving money for, oh, now it is time. Now I can step into the mine and I can progress through this as fast as I can. And this is amazing. We have special offers for event mines, which are only available during this time. And the players really want to punch through this mine as fast as possible. And they're doing this for themselves. It's not like it's premium content or something, no. They just decide this for themselves. And they are really appreciating this. This is something that I have to admit, which combines monetization and player fun. And this is something that I really like. All right, last topic for me is the expedition feature. Our multiplayer feature, which is asynchronous. We invented this, and it's basically a pretty simple concept. So you have a choice between different expeditions you could join, or you could start, And each of these expeditions defines by a certain period of time, let's say 12 hours, which it needs to be completed. And there is also a certain amount of rewards that you get once it is completed. So it's basically a simple struct. But when a player decides to start an expedition, he basically just have to wait. So you can just say, okay, 12 hours, and the players are really scheduling themselves based on these expeditions. So they say, okay, I take this one with 12 hours because in 12 hours I'll have time to check the game again. So they're scheduling themselves. They are motivating themselves to get back into the game, which is amazing. We don't have to do that. They do it themselves. They give themselves a time where they want to come back into the game. And of course, they play then as well. So this is huge. But in addition to that, we also added this multiplayer functionality. So you can invite friends to your expeditions. And when a player joins your expedition, for example, let's say 12 hours expedition, and one of your friends joins you, then this amount will be reduced by, for example, 2 hours. So you are granted a certain progression boost as well. So this is a pretty simple concept, but still players like to incorporate with their friends. They want to say, hey, I'm currently starting a legendary expedition. Do you want to join me? And then the other one pops up his game, he joins his expedition, and he plays the game again, of course. Or they even inviting friends to play the game at all, which haven't played the game before. And of course, you have this visualization, you have these people running on the right side, stuff like that. And in the end, everybody gets rewarded because everybody participated in the same event. And this is just cool. And this grants us also a lot of options for life ops. So for example, we can rebalance every expedition that there is. We can even rebalance them while they are running, all just thanks to our life ops architecture in the backend. We can simply add new expeditions to the existing ones. We could say, okay, we have an expedition which is only time limited as well. We could do that. We could say, okay, we have certain very rare expeditions that we only want to grant to certain players. Also possible. No problem with our implementation. Now I will show you how it is done in PlayFab. I hope some of you might already have touched PlayFab in some way, because this will have some content depending on that. So what you see on the right is what the player is seeing when he gets the option to choose from a certain pool of expeditions. And we can modify this amount as well in the backend. So you see on the top left that we currently have set 3 expeditions to choose from. Each of these expeditions that you see on the right side, we call them expedition tickets, because they're not the real expeditions. They are just like blueprints for an expedition to start. And these we store in the backend as items in a catalog. So PlayFab offers an item system, like I said, inventory. They also have an item system. And we just define these expedition blueprints or expedition tickets as items in PlayFab. One of these expedition tickets might look like this. So we see the rare expedition on the right side that is highlighted. For example, looks in the backend exactly like this. So it has an ID. It has. It is consumable. So what happens is when you consume an item, it will start a real expedition. So after that, it will be removed from your inventory and you get another third one. So every time you start an expedition, you get 3 new ones, stuff like that. And you see custom data. And this custom data is all we need to define how this expedition should look like. So for example, there is a rarity written. You see they differ in rarity. For example, rare is the 2 and legendary is the 4 and stuff like that. You have roles, which are important for drawing expeditions randomly. Then you have certain times defined. So as you see, there are 5 entries for times. The most left one is for 1 player. And you see, the more players there are in, the smaller the amount of time that is necessary. So you see, it is 1 player, it is 43,000 seconds. And with 5 players, it's only half of that. So you can halve the time necessary by just inviting friends to your expedition. So this is also a huge bonus for the players. And as you see, there is a list of rewards on the bottom as well, which, as you see, not all rewards are visible from the beginning. And this also motivates the player to expect something special. And we won't tell them everything. And of course, they are special. Please play the game and stuff. But but still, we don't tell it from the beginning. So there's also this anticipation from the players. So what happens when a player starts one of these expeditions? PlayFab offers a functionality which is called shared group data, which is basically just a space where you can store data in. And this space is only visible to and editable from a certain amount of players. So you see the members list on the left side, which only describes myself because I'm the only member of this expedition right now. And I have access to the data which is stored below and can access it and, yeah, you know. So what happens when I create this is in CloudScript, we simply consume the expedition ticket that was used for creating this expedition, and then we fill the shared group data with the data we need, and we extract from this ticket, from this blueprint. When a player wants to join me, he will see my expedition now as well on the top right as a joinable expedition. And if he does so, if he decides to join me, he will simply be added to the shared group data as a member, and we, of course, adjust some data in the shared group data. But it's as simple as that. We just update the shared group data for a next member. We just add a new participant to the expedition, and that's it. And then you can see what you see on the right side, that there are players who joined me. And I can see them because the shared group data is accessible for me as well, and so it updates for me as well. All right, time is running out. So I come to a conclusion for you and some takeaways for you. I want to remind you of the concept we have, of this approach we do when developing games. Start with the minimum viable product. Start with something where you say a lot of no's. Just get rid of a lot of stuff that is not necessary to find out whether or not the core mechanic is working. First thing is find out whether or not the core mechanic of your game is fun. If it is not, then don't develop it any further. Don't try to squeeze something out of that. It won't work. Just get rid of it and start with the next idea. First things first. And then, if you find out that something is really cool, that players are coming back to your game using the day one retention of maybe 70%, then think about updating as soon as possible. Just as soon and as much as possible. We have a weekly development cycle, so we can incorporate user feedback in the most appropriate way. So we can just put stuff out there. The players are requesting something and we offer it. The players are demanding some new features and we can give it to them in 1 week and less. This is just amazing, and this is what our players expect from us. And this is why they keep playing our game. So constantly add new game features. Never stop developing. Our development process does not stop once we release the game. Instead, it just starts. And if you are experimenting with live ops, I would always recommend you to use existing tools, because it's so much work to set up your own backend, to set up your own server infrastructure and stuff like that. So just use existing tools like we, for example, do PlayFab. You could use Azure and stuff like that. So just use existing ones so you can experiment, so you can try stuff out, so you can get a feel of what could work and what not. Because this is also, just try the minimum of the feature and then add new stuff to this feature as well. Always go this approach, because that way you can make sure that you don't run into a wall. Thank you for your attention. I will be here for some minutes, and if there are questions that I am not capable of answering, Ollie will be here as well. He's the CTO of Fluffy Fairy Games, and he will be at the Azure booth as well at the times you just see here. Thank you very much.